And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And let's dive right into it. I can figure out my little remote doohickey. There we go. So big news this week is?
Android developers now have Azure Mobile Services. Now, we have talked about Azure Mobile Services before, but the idea behind it is to have Azure be a unified way across platforms, iOS, that exists now, Windows 8, Windows Phone, and now Android, so you can build applications. We actually include a sample tic-tac-toe leaderboard, so we can see that I am, in fact, beating you. It would be great.
Come on.
As a service. Yes. And then a way to put in a product feedback. For example, imagine you have a product feedback screen. You, as a mobile developer, want to have the same unified way to do that. Azure Mobile Services across platform is a great way to do that. And those two samples are a great way to get started, too.
Yeah. So if people that are new to Azure Mobile Services, it basically makes it really easy for you to, you know, in just a very short number of steps, set up the back-end data that you might need, the cloud services that you might need to provide those REST-style interfaces out to your devices. And then we also have client-side experiences as well that make it easy for, you know, one line of code to insert a data or to read from a table and get, you know, top 20 customers, that sort of thing. So it's available now for Windows Phone, for iOS, and for Windows 8, and now, of course, for Android. Although I have to say, I was watching some guys on the team playing with the Android emulator. We're really lucky over in the Windows Phone world. That thing, maybe it's just the way that we're using it. I don't mean to bash any Android developers out there, but it takes like 15 minutes just to boot up the emulator.
Oh, that's funny.
For Android. So, so anyway, good stuff for folks that are doing Android development.
So the next thing is the Azure Mobile Services Managed Client. So, and the reason I think this is cool is because, again, we are fans of NuGet. But before you had to go to the Azure portal or the Windows Azure Downloads page, go to there, find the Mobile Services SDK, download and install the SDK. Mm-hmm. And really what you want to do is have a nice client library. So now by distributing via NuGet, one, it's that much easier. You have that one centralized place. Two, you get the, like you would with any other updates via NuGet, the library changes, you can get that new update.
Yep, got to NuGetify everything these days. It's kind of the future here.
Yeah, so, you know, in combination, if you're building Azure, easy thing to do.
Yep. So speaking of mobile web applications, or mobile applications, I should say, this is a great article that really talks about analytics. And so analytics is something that we've talked about in the past. This is an offering that I had not yet heard of. It's from a company called Flurry. And they make a free offering that's available for you to just drop into your application. So they have an SDK that works with Windows Phone applications. And the idea is that before you ship your application to the store, you can drop in a couple of lines of code that will basically phone home information about your application. So you can get everything from, you know, what time of day are users using it, to what types of devices do they have, to
what is your most popular feature? Are people clicking one feature versus the other?
I don't think this particular offering includes the feature level overview, but
you're right,
some analytics solutions do. So like Preemptive Analytics, they offer a paid version that you can get, which does tell you, at Microsoft we use the term SQIM to describe all the customer experience data. So if you opt in, we can get information about how many times you launch an IntelliTrace session, for example. You can get that type of information if you use Preemptive's offering. I think this particular solution is much more basic than that, but it's free.
Okay, great.
Yep. Async.
So Lucian Wyszyk did a three-part series on essential tips for async. So Charles Troy, who's in the studio, talks about some of the things to avoid. And one of the key ones is obviously don't use async void for top-level handlers. Async void should only be used for top-level handlers.
Right.
Don't use it everywhere else because people are using it, and that is not a good thing.
I feel like there've been this series and then like four other blog posts that we've covered.
And we have talked about some of these that Lucian had talked about.
Stop using async void, people. We don't want to have to keep reminding you every single time. I keep telling my mom. She continues. Ah, jeez.
Some of the other ones like CPU versus I/O bound, and then the last one too is just thinking about using or ways that one can use async wrap events in async such that you can actually do orchestration, meaning once this animation completes and the sound completes and this completes, then do this using, say, when all, meaning I'm waiting for all three. Or you can do something, for example, like when any. So when any three of these things happen, then do this. So it gets into that and it really helps simplify the code as well.
Interesting. So it's starting to blur the lines between, you know, kind of asynchronous programming and real workflow solutions.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So this is a nice little blog post from a guy that must be, you know, a long distant cousin. It's Peter Kellner.
No relation?
No, as far as I know.
All right.
But he put together a 3-part blog series, and I like it because of its simplicity, where he basically shows you the core essentials of what it takes to build a simple REST controller, and then extend that with a couple of different client interfaces using JavaScript, and then he adds a CRUD support to that as well. And I like it because, you know, he doesn't get bogged down in the details of the implementation of all the individual components, but really just focuses on what's the structure, what are the mechanics when we're talking about this type of solution.
Cool. So this one's fun, just from having been on Popfly team. This is a tool called Construct 2, and the idea behind it is you're building games without writing scripts. So it's a visual way to build games, visual way to build eventing systems, and so on. And one of the coolest things is, you know, you can read Greg's post on this, but he actually walks through one of their template games, goes through and says publish, and the last step is publish to, say, Windows Store. It actually builds an SLN for you, all the solution files, all the things,
Wow. So
that, like, at the end of the day, you double click and you have your app built.
That's
so
awesome.
The underlying technology is HTML5, mm-hmm. but you're not writing, say, you know, CSS or handling sprites or anything else.
Yeah.
You're worried about how gameplay works, and they obviously include a bunch of cool game samples too.
That's awesome.
And best parts, we love free stuff. There's mm-hmm. like 11 megs of free audio sound files, right? So if you're just looking for, like, the, you know, shot sound or whatever. That stuff's all included as well.
Nice. That's awesome. Very good.
Yeah.
What's this other one? Using phone resources.
Yeah, so this is really an overview video that does a lot of things. Rob Tiffany and Andy Wigley talk about some of the things that people are going to be using for a Phone 8. So, like, things like launchers and choosers, choosing contacts, calendars, like how you can save an appointment task and be like, hey, I have something. It's like, add it to my calendar, mm-hmm. for example, or add a new contact API. And other things that we're probably familiar with, like, you know, how do you actually use the camera? How do you mm-hmm. get an image from the camera? How do you manipulate a video stream? Maybe you're doing, like, an AR thing where I want to draw something on top.
Right.
We've done cool coding for fun example. This is really sort of like the one overview video that hits a lot of the almost sexier features.
Yeah.
And really shows the power of the platform.
I love what these Jumpstart guys are doing. They really, they've got a high quality set of content that's coming out. We've mentioned a couple of those in the past. So definitely bookmark their site if you like that.
And it's all on Channel 9 too.
It's all on Channel 9, which is great. So web development goodies. I really like this post. It's nothing that, you know, we haven't talked about before, but Adil, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. He's a Microsoft valued professional, and he goes through and he lists some of his top favorite features that are of interest to web developers in Visual Studio 2012. So obviously Page Inspector, but lots of other, you know, little fit and finish goodies in here, and I won't go through. You should read the post, but he's also current all the way through updates 1 and update 2. Which is in CTP4 status as of this week.
Yeah, some of the fun stuff on that web development GUIs is, of course, like, for example, the color picker, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, while you're in markup, you can actually get a color picker, for example.
Yeah.
It's like, geez, how do I do this? Or whether you're using hex or see what it is. It's awesome.
Something that's, like, in between fuchsia and yellow.
Oh, God.
But canary yellow. So.
Do you see what I have to work with?
I know. This is welcome to my life. He doesn't appreciate the difference between fuchsia and canary yellow. speaking of free stuff, this is a site that that has royalty-free icons that you can use. At least the ones that I spot checked were royalty-free. They may have some free ones in here as well. But there's lots of categories across here and some really high-quality black and white icons. So definitely check this out. This is from Icon Monster. Good stuff there.
We always love the free stuff to add.
More free stuff here.
Now, this is actually what's called the iChart. So what you need to do is find every async method possibly available in the document. No, so many of us know there's new APIs for using Office mm-hmm. apps that are available via JavaScript.
Yep.
So we love releasing posters that show basically object models.
It's the cubicle poster.
This is the JavaScript API cubicle poster that people should get life size.
Yep.
So it includes things like document and all the things around document and really things like async results and what actually returns via APIs mm-hmm. and so on. So we cover these a lot, but I figured if anybody's doing Office development, this is going to be helpful.
Do you have a favorite API?
I mean, I actually always, because sometimes we need data, always end up doing like Excel spreadsheets and automation of APIs where you basically, you know, new up a worksheet and then we basically have a collection of rows and cells that we're basically dumping data in.
I was joking, actually, but there you go. There's Dan's favorite JavaScript API for Office.
Yeah.
So this is another article. This is talking about some of the new fit and finish feature work that's being done to the Test Explorer. So we've talked in the past about how Visual Studio 2010 had, you know, five or six different windows that in 2012 became collapsed into just a single Test Explorer, which is where you can launch all of your automated tests. Well, not all of your automated tests. I should say your unit tests and your coded UI tests. Your web performance and load tests are still handled separately. But the feedback we got from people was that some of the functionality that used to be in 2010, like test list, that went away when we switched over to this new Test Explorer unified framework. And so in update one for Visual Studio 2012, you saw us bring back the test categories by way of what are called traits. And they're called traits because not every test framework implements test category like InUnit does, or rather like the Visual Studio unit testing framework does. And so we wanted a generic descriptor because you can use multiple different types of test adapters. So anyway, traits was implemented, but then there's also the other need to have what are called test lists. And with test lists, what they're calling
right?
it here now is playlists. It used to be test lists and 2010, you can add an arbitrary list of tests, and you can say these are the tests I want to run, every afternoon when I go to lunch, and these are the tests that I want to run every time I make a, change to code, or every time I check my build. I am pretty hungry, yes, which means that we should probably get to lunch, which means we have to first go to Picks of the Week. So this is a great post by Scott Hanselman. He talks about this thing called the Wilhelm Scream, which is a new concept to me. It's basically a sound clip, which has been around in movies for years and years and years. And it shows up in low-budget films and high-budget films like
Lord of the Rings. You got to watch the YouTube video,
and it's kind of amazing once you know that it's there. And he goes through and he kind of points out these, shortcuts that people take when they're building these movies like The Net and Jurassic Park. And a lot of these I had heard of, but Scott does a really good job of highlighting a lot of ones that
Yeah, the funny one is they're trying to get an IP address. So it's like, to do that, I'll build a GUI interface in Visual Basic to get an IP address.
Which, of course, you would do, but you wouldn't tell people that you would do that, right? Or then the other one.
PowerShell?
Yeah, well, maybe. Then the other one is Jurassic Park, which I had forgotten about, even though I've seen the movie like 10 times when I was a little kid. And she's like, oh, this is a Unix file system. I know how to do this. And there's like this 3D graph of the file system that she's going through. And when I was like 12, I was like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm sure that Jurassic Park control computers are just like that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Not so much. So...
Cool.
That brings us to your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week, another cool one Greg found on the Kind of Fun blog, is battery-powered Kinect on wheels. So a couple things to keep in mind here. Like, one is, basically this person did the wonderful slicing, dicing, and figured out how to get everything battery-powered.
Wow.
Ran the Kinect Explorer, which is kind of like the Hello World demo that does depth sensor and skeletal tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Plug it into a service, so that way you don't actually need, the wall wart, as I think they're called,
okay,
to plug in. So you now have, a PC that has a battery, and you're connected with the battery, and you're fine. The thing that I'd love to see is obviously having like a really small PC, like the smallest one that could handle Kinect, because Kinect does obviously require, things like image and depth processing to
right.
be able to get the skeletal data.
Right.
Like, what is the smallest thing you could do? You add some wheels, and man, that is, and kind of make it autonomous. It does add some of that face tracking library and
yeah.
be like, you look like Brian Keller, let me shoot you.
Yeah.
Well, with our Nerf gun.
There's the one that the Microsoft Research guys built, which is basically a platform that we had Habib on the show a while back.
Right.
And it would be autonomous, and it would go around, and what was it called? The paparazzi.
Party
paparazzi. Or
party thing, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. So it's good to see that there's still a lot of steam out there in terms of enthusiasts that are cracking open the Kinect and doing awesome things with it.
Cool. Very good stuff.
So I won't be here next week. I'll be down under. So if anyone's in Australia or New Zealand, I'd love to meet up with you. But you'll be around with some special guest, I'm sure.
Obviously.
And so I'll see you next week.
Thanks.